Well, hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of WA This Week. Really glad you can take some time to find out about the issues that have been occurring in the past 7 days. Look, I guess I should start by acknowledging the fact that our borders are finally open. And, you know, it's great that families can reunite and that friends can see each other. I guess one of the concerns we have with the border reopening is, in direct parallel with the border reopening, the Premier McGowan has introduced a whole raft of new restrictions on what you can do in the state. Restrictions on business in terms of the number of people they can have, masks for children grade 3 and up in schools, and really severe limits on people attending different venues. We've been really concerned by the way the Premier has done this. All through this crisis, what we've seen is the Premier coming out very suddenly with knee-jerk reactions that really seem to be sort of panicked reactions in the moment. They're decisions made on the run. They don't appear to be considered decisions. The Labor Party, the McGowan Labor government, has had 2 years to prepare for the border opening, but their decision making appears completely chaotic. I mean, what we've said in relation to the border is that now we've got the border open, but we live in the lockdown state. And here it is, you know, we've had Premier McGowan boasting about how much, how he's kept Western Australia safe and how he's kept Western Australia as an open state. Here we are 2 years into this pandemic. We've got the borders open like every other state in Australia, but we're actually the most locked down state in Australia, which sort of goes to the core of the Premier's claims and boasts about us being open for business. Now, look, you know, the big miners and others aren't significantly impacted by this, but small business, in particular in the hospitality sector, have really been damaged by this. We saw the government come out and they said, well, we recognise that there's an issue with small business, but we've got a compensation package and we're going to offer money to those businesses. And they put some $72 million on the table for that. Now, compared to the other states, that is a very small amount of money, but let's not dwell on that. It's a direct consequence of the restrictions applied by the McGowan government. And if you look at the qualification for that support, then it's people have to have shown a 50% reduction in income on top of or of the income that they received last year. Now, anyone who was in hospitality knows that for most of them, they saw substantially reduced trade in 2021. And as they've come into 2022, you know, they may have seen some slight increase, but of course these restrictions now have really hurt a whole range of small and large operators. 50% on top of a reduced income last year, for many of those businesses, that means they're below the watermark. They can't make money. And you know, for many of them, they're not going to qualify for that, even though they'll be losing money, and they'll get no help at all. And we're going to see even more businesses in the state go underwater, cease operating. In relation to the restrictions, one of the questions that people have been asking is, given that we now are probably the most vaccinated population in the world, why do we have the same type of restrictions and in fact the same level of restrictions that we had 2 years ago when we didn't have any vaccination at all? It seems odd that we've become such a vaccinated state and yet the government is applying restrictions in the same way that they applied when we didn't have vaccination, in fact any vaccines available at the start of this pandemic, and obviously then, you know, clearly, you know, some significant shutdowns were warranted because people didn't know what this disease was going to behave like, but also we didn't have any proven medical treatments. But here we are 2 years later, highly effective vaccines, and yet we have the same level of restrictions. It makes you worry that part of the rationale for the restrictions is that, you know, Mark McGowan has used this crisis to keep himself in the media. Why does the Premier have to give advice of the Chief Health Officer? The Chief Health Officer can give that advice himself. Why does Mark McGowan release public announcements through his personal Facebook page? And this is something he's done from the start of this crisis. It seems to me that that's really a misuse. It's a private page. It's the Premier's private Facebook page. Now, he's allowed to have that. But that shouldn't be used for official government announcements. Official government announcements should occur on an official government website. It seems to me that as much as anything, that's about the Premier's popularity more than it is about getting effective messages out to the community. You know, it's really clear when you see the panicked way this government behaves, they haven't done the planning. They've wasted the gift of time that they've had to prepare for the time when our borders were opened. You know, imagine you're a tourist coming to Western Australia. Yesterday we had the Premier say he couldn't guarantee that he wouldn't close the borders again. Come on, how can he say that? I mean, either the borders are open or they're shut, or they're going to shut. You know, you can't hold that threat over people. If you're a tourist, would you be coming here on a high-end holiday with tours, attending functions, when the Premier's made it very clear that just at the snap of his fingers, he could shut the borders? And what we did see last week was, you know, a dramatic escalation in restrictions on venues and functions, it appeared his whim, I'll be frank, so that he can appear to be tough on these things and tough on COVID. There doesn't appear to be good, solid medical evidence behind it. And a lot of people have challenged the basis of those. But as I say, if you're a tourist, would you come here in that circumstance? I think we're going to see a lot of tourists staying away, not only because Premier McGowan actually deliberately went out of his way to insult people in the eastern states and people overseas with some of the really dreadful comments that he made, but also because they actually have no certainty that if they organise to come here and organise an event that they're going to actually be able to attend it or even come into the state. You know, this has been really poorly managed by Mark McGowan. One of the things we see with Labor governments typically is they talk about how they're there for the ordinary person, they're defending the small person. What we see in power, and especially I can say with the Mark McGowan Labor government, is utterly ruthless control of information. Anyone that dares criticise them is punished in one way or another. They, people talk about glass jaws. Well, whatever the analogy is for a jaw that's substantially more fragile than a glass jaw, that's what they display. But, you know, this is manifesting itself in a really disturbing pattern of behaviour. And I think this is something that every decent Western Australian is concerned about and will be concerned about when they know the details. Now, I think many of you would have seen in the media, in the Department of Communities, there's been a deal of dysfunction. The Minister, the Honourable Simon McGuirk, is clearly not up to the job of running that department and is someone who should resign, especially given this recent incident that has occurred under her watch, and it has to have been with her knowledge. That department has been riven. There was a report carried out by an independent body, and they said that department was riven with racism and dysfunction. Many of the Aboriginal staff in the department felt that they were treated as second-class citizens. And that's a really disturbing fact in itself. But the more disturbing thing is that the department apparently identified the person who they thought was responsible. Just a little while ago, 10 police, some of them armed, turned up to that lady's house at 7 o'clock in the morning to raid her house for apparent evidence that she may have leaked some of that information. Now, let's get to the base of the information. This is a 3-year-old report. You know, we're not talking about someone leaking state secrets to a hostile, country overseas. We're talking about an experienced person Someone who's very concerned about the way Aboriginal people are treated within the Department of Communities, and a report's been buried for 3 years. They're concerned that it's not being dealt with, and apparently may have leaked that to the media. 10 police turn up to a house, some armed, her partner and her young daughter are in the house. I mean, we're not talking about raiding bikies who've got shotguns, you know, or automatic weapons. We're talking about a person who's just a normal person in their suburban home, a public official. I cannot comprehend why that was done for any other purpose than, in fact, intimidation of that person. I think that is disgraceful. Now, the Minister and the Premier denied any knowledge of this when they were challenged by the media, because the media, I think, you know, like any, you know, decent person, hears that story and goes, how could that happen? How could that happen in Western Australia? We aren't in some, you know, dictatorship. Well, you know, maybe we are, but, you know, we wouldn't think we are. We're in a free Western liberal democracy. How could that possibly happen, that you would have 10 police turn up, some of them armed, to raid a public servant's home who is simply believed to have released some information from a three-year-old report? Might I say now, post that, the report was actually released, so the information can't have been too confidential if that was the case. But in any case, you know, that did occur. The minister denied that she had any knowledge of the raid. Then it subsequently turns out that, in fact, the minister was aware that complaints had been made from the police. Now, I think any of you that are aware of government, when the police are about to do these things, we know that they inform the ministers, the premier is told, about these things, so that if they're questioned by the media, they don't get surprised. So we knew that it couldn't be the case that they didn't know. And of course, it's turned out that they should know. You know, Simone McGuirk should resign. She should not hold that job. She lives in a department that oversees the welfare, apart from other areas, of children who are wards of the state. I mean, my colleague, the Honourable Nick Grann, has outlined this, and there was a good article in The West this week covering this topic. But, you know, you had a situation of children under the care of the state. These are children who live in, you know, in really terrible circumstances and have had to have been taken over as wards of the state. I mean, I think it was something like 11 of those children. They had no idea where they were. They actually, these are wards of the state, they actually didn't physically know where they were. And there was one child for a considerable period of months that department had no idea where they were. Otherwise, that department is not doing its job, and they need to, there needs to be another minister in charge of that department. Also a failure of these super departments of the government. Their whole experiment in that has been a complete failure. Look, I want to just tell you that this isn't a single unrelated incident. There was an incident a little earlier this year. There's a truancy officer in Halls Creek, Brock Burston, and he was asked by the local shire. And it's a local shire that does an enormous amount of work with the local Aboriginal community. They work hand in hand, collaboratively, to deal with the issue of truancy of kids and making sure that kids are encouraged to go on, stay in school, and then go on and get jobs. I mean, that shire offers guarantees a job to every kid who finishes year 11 or year 12 at school. So, you know, they're really interested in it. The shire asked Brock, they said, what's the attendance rate at school for years 11 and 12? And he told them, he said, look, there's only about 8% of the children in that town attend school on a regular basis. Now, you would think that that's a very disturbing fact, and in fact really dreadful in terms of the lack of attendance at school. And we know that's going to lead to a whole lot of dysfunction in that community if kids aren't engaged. What did the government do? Sue Ellery, the Minister for Education, her department oversaw four police in Halls Creek. There are only 16 police in Halls Creek. Four police raid his home. He's charged with releasing confidential information, actually taken to court. Can you comprehend it? And his crime was telling the local shire, who are intimately involved with that community and dealing with issues of, you know, encouraging kids to go at school, told them what the attendance rate at the school was. Well, the courts very sensibly threw that charge out, and I must say I have great respect for our courts that they see good sense in these things. Well, the education department's doubled down. Now they're carrying on a further in what they call an integrity investigation, and he hasn't been able to go back to work. What a disgrace. You know, on top of the issue with the lady who worked at the Department of Communities house being raided, this is a pattern of behaviour of government, and a disturbing pattern of behaviour I don't think any of you would expect to occur in Western Australia. This is overseen by Mark McGowan. What has he done? What has Mark McGowan done? Has he admonished those ministers? Has he moved them on? Has he said that was wrong? Not a word. Not a word from Premier Mark McGowan. And that goes to his character as well. You can guess I'm upset by these incidents, but I think every Western Australian would be upset by these incidents. This is no way to treat fellow Western Australians, and no way to treat good civil servants who are simply doing their jobs. On another topic, you will have seen in the press, we all heard the terrible tragedy involving Aishwarya Ashworth last year. There was an investigation in that and a review, and that review had 30 recommendations. Those 30 recommendations dealt with a range of systemic issues. Well, what do we see all of these months later, and the parents went to the press about this, only one of the 30 recommendations has been implemented. You know, we had the former sacked health minister, Roger Cook. He was completely slow to deal with this matter, tried to throw the staff, the junior staff who were working their hearts out in the hospital, threw them to the lions with reporting them, or at least through the hospital they were reported to regulators and investigated. Absolutely disgraceful. I have some knowledge of people who work in that hospital. It was devastating for those people, for people who just were doing their jobs, for a hospital that was chronically understaffed. And those people already under stress were treated like that. That was bad enough. But we have our new health minister. I wouldn't even say that our new health minister has got learner plates on, because I'm certain she'd fail the test. And has certainly failed the test here. As I say, only one of those 30 recommendations has been implemented. You know, Minister Sanderson has overseen almost 10,000 hours of ambulance ramping. As I've said to you before, you know, ambulance ramping numbers aren't just numbers. This is sick people, seriously ill people, who should be in hospital, should be in a bed, should be getting treatment, out in a car park, waiting to go into a hospital. More than that, typically those ambulances will have two or three paramedics. So for every hour a patient is ramped outside the hospital, those paramedics are ramped outside the hospital as well, unable to go and help other people. And I think any of you that have had the experience of calling for an ambulance will know that that means that ambulances aren't available to come and help. You know, we've got a Labor government, as I said, who've had 2 years to prepare for today. And in the last 5 years, they've done nothing to keep our hospitals at the level they need to have been kept at. And in the last 2 years, outside of a couple of circus tents outside at the front of the hospitals, they've done nothing meaningful to prepare this state for the opening of the borders and for the COVID coming into our community. Now, you know, it's pleasing to, it's tragic to see that, you know, we have had some severe health impacts for people, but it's pleasing to see that there's a relatively low impact at this stage. But the truth is, our hospital system is completely unprepared, not just for COVID, it's actually completely unprepared for the normal caseload. Once again, we've got elective surgeries cancelled, and people with critical surgeries, cancer treatments and the like, are being told they can't get treatment because the government's now reserved beds to deal with potential COVID cases. Look, I guess a pretty somber WA this week, but disturbing topics from a government that is not fit frankly, to govern the state of Western Australia. But thank you very much for listening, as always. Really grateful for you taking the time to listen. Appreciate your feedback, and just remember, you can get this as a podcast and share it with your colleagues and friends on iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher. And otherwise, if you the video is available on Facebook, just search Dr. David Honey and you'll get the video. Thank you very much.